Well, we're talking all about franchising today, and despite the many government tax relief and assistance programs, I think many franchise businesses and perhaps even new franchisors won't be able to financially withstand the loss of revenue caused by the COVID-19 crisis. And I think in many sectors, by periods of mandatory closures, as well as by the subsequent costs that will have to be incurred to meet the standards that are now required to protect the health of not only customers but employees and to maintain physical distance. That said, it is a resilient sector, except for franchisors with a very large number of franchisees. I think the failure of one or a few franchisees may have an important impact on an entire franchise network, including on its reputation and credibility, certainly in its markets and with its customers, suppliers and partners. And in some cases, the failure of a franchisee also has direct financial consequences for its franchisor. And this is the case, for example, if the franchisee owes significant amounts of money to the franchisor, or if the franchisor has provided some form of security or commitment, for example, an inventory buyback agreement or a comfort letter in favor of a creditor of the franchisee, or if the franchisor is the main lessee of the premises in which the franchisee operates its franchise. And given this reality, current for some and I think foreseeable for many, what should a franchisor do to aid and assist their franchisees through this tough period? To talk about this and the impacts of COVID-19 on the franchise sector, I'm joined now by Akona Tagne, chairperson of the Franchise Association of South Africa and chief people officer for KFC Africa, Tony De Fonseca, who's the immediate past chairman of FASA, and he's also MD of OBC Group, and Nicole Gundelfinger, who's group marketing manager for Cash Converters. Tony, the franchise sector, I think at the end of last year, was certainly holding its own in what was already a trying economic environment pre-COVID. Looking at FASA's franchise survey for last year, the sector contributed roughly 734 billion rands worth of turnover. That's equivalent to 13.9% of the country's GDP through some 800 franchise systems and 48,000 franchise outlets. So it's a massive sector. What impact has COVID had on that picture?
Well, I think like most businesses in South Africa, there is a huge impact, and even the businesses that are classified as essential services had some kind of impact. But it has got a massive impact. I mean, a large sector of the franchising environment is quick service restaurants, takeaways, that type of thing, which were immediately impacted by a sudden closure through the hard lockdown, and then obviously affected through periods where you could only do deliveries. And even now, with the reintroduction of alcohol ban, we literally see that whole sector literally on its knees, which is quite sad. And overall, obviously, you know, all sorts of services that are in the franchising environment were impacted. Obviously, environments that were classified as essential services, much like in our case, which is sort of butchery supermarkets and food stores, we were very fortunate and in many ways blessed that we could operate. But for the rest of the category, literally everything and knowing quite a few restaurant owners and franchisors in the franchising sector, I it's very sad to say, but I think more than 50% may not survive these times. So these are really, really trying times to try and keep businesses going. And that's what, as a country and as an industry, we need to do all we can to try and keep as many franchise systems and businesses going, because ultimately, this is the environment that's going to be employing people going into the future. So it has been trying. It has a massive impact on industry across the board. And even though franchising contributed such a large part to the economy, it has had a massive impact because of that. Yeah.
And obviously a lot of it COVID-19 related, much of it also the regulations flowing from the response to COVID-19 as well. And you mentioned the bar turn on alcohol sales or the reintroduction of the ban there. That's been hugely damaging to the restaurant franchise market, as well as the curfew, because people tended to go out after work with the curfew in place. That's having a big impact as well. Akona, we know QSR was heavily impacted in the hard lockdown, but was probably ideally placed to bounce back as takeaways were the first to be allowed again post the hard lockdown. From a KFC perspective, how have you seen that sort of J curve of recovery? Is it into the J yet?
Thank you, Michael. I think the reality is, like Tony said, our businesses have been hugely impacted by COVID, more so by the period of lockdown. I think as we've come out of lockdown, as we have been progressively sort of transitioning from level to level, is what we've seen is customers are starting to come back, but our customers are also a lot more conscious around hygiene in the restaurants. When we talk about the dining option, for example, we had a couple of conversations around, do we open our dining option? Do we keep it closed? We want to keep our customers safe. We want to keep our own team members safe. So just all of those considerations. And I think, Michael, just in the context of trying to regenerate our sales and maintaining or sustaining our businesses into the future, is there's this new line item in our P&L, the hygiene expenditure, that no one could have imagined before. We now suddenly have to spend so much on just the hygiene factor within our restaurants, which is something that no one could have imagined would be the case before. But I can certainly say, because of the multi-channels through which we operate, for example, we've got our e-commerce platforms, we've got the delivery options, we've been able to resuscitate some of those sales and kind of really just allow ourselves to bounce back.
And from a staffing perspective, it was quite interesting to see a City of Joburg announcement saying that I think roughly 15% of their staff were available in one particular department, either because of new infections or those self-isolating or quarantining thanks to COVID-19. And we are in the midst of the surge. What are you seeing from a staffing perspective?
So, Michael, we've been manic around hygiene in our restaurants, such that the number of infections we see, in as much as the trend is very similar to the national trend, I can actually say we've seen very low numbers of infections in our restaurants, even less so people that have passed on due to COVID. And that really talks to the protocols we have in our restaurants. If people are not feeling well, we allow them to stay at home. And I think because we generally employ large numbers of people in our restaurants, we've been able to really just make sure we've got enough people working at any given point in time.
Nicole, cash converters, this sort of environment plays into cash converters' strengths. People in a recession looking to liquidate assets, and that's obviously a positive for cash converters, but from an operational perspective, how have you seen the evolution through the hard lockdown into where you find yourself now?
Well, similar to a corner sentiment, we have been incredibly stringent with protocols. We have large retail spaces with three different business units under one roof. Critical that we get screening in place, that our staff are healthy and happy. We've had people working in shifts and teams in the actual stores. We have only had two stores that we've had to temporarily close and reopen, which again speaks to the protocols in the same vein as the KFC brand. From a head office perspective, we've worked from home since the 27th of March. This has forced the digitization of our business so that we are providing as much support as we can to our stores to keep them trading through the surge and coming out the other side. So from a franchising perspective, very good to force this digitization into our network.
From a franchisor perspective, I think what many businesses are perhaps discovering now is that you can do a whole lot more with less in terms of having a big HQ. You might not need as large a HQ in the future. Do you think that's going to be one of the lasting positive legacies on the franchisor?
Absolutely. It's going to be a very interesting tension. There is a balance between culture and getting people together in a room to keep that spirit and the value set moving. But balanced with productivity, which has definitely been at an all-time high over the last couple of months. I think our technology department under our CIO will be the last department that come back to the office. They have loved this. It's been great. We've produced digital assets. We launched our web shop next week, something we'd roadmapped for early next year, and it's been absolutely phenomenal what working off-site has done for those guys. Obviously balanced with the tension of a franchise network where our franchisees and their staff are front and center as we head into the surge. So difficult balancing act there to be empathetic with people on the front line. But absolutely, I think that is something that all businesses are reevaluating and relooking at. Not great for the landlords, though.
It isn't great for the landlords. And I suppose brings in the role here of Tony to bring you in the role of the master franchisor to help their franchisees at this time negotiate with landlords, for example, and potentially offer certain license fee discounts. How are the franchisors responding to their franchisees in the network? Because I think that'll go some way to ensuring at least some resilience through this dark period.
I think, you know, by and large, obviously it's in the franchisor's industry to assist their franchisees through this period. And certainly our approach has been where sales have declined, and we found that in initial parts of the lockdown, where specifically our city center stores felt quite a negative impact on their sales because of the taxi curfews and only being able to operate a couple of hours a day. There we felt the most impact, and I must say our experience is we approached a lot of our landlords, and they were very amenable to offer discounts. In some instances, we even got discounts where we didn't ask for them, which was great. What we did find is that our community stores, the turnover actually went up initially, and I think that's just really a consequence of people shopping closer to home. And of course, the fact that takeaways and QSRs were closed as well. So we were very fortunate in that regard that very few of our stores actually dropped in sales. And as I say, mostly the city center stores, where we found that we did get cooperation from the landlords. But just talking to other brands and other franchisors, I think they're throwing whatever they can at it because, I've heard of complete fee discounts, reducing it to as much as possible, keeping it to minimum fees, just to keep the head office going. Because at the end of the day, I mean, franchising really is a collaborative exercise. It's a partnership, really. You know, I always refer to franchising, and I don't like the term franchisee sometimes. I like to think of them as investors in our business. And as senior management in a brand, it's your responsibility to bring your investors a return. So it's really in any a reputable franchisor will go out of their way to make sure that their members stay and the investors stay alive. At the end of the day, it's in their long-term interest. So generally, we found in the franchising sector, the bigger brands have come to the party, and even the smaller brands where they managed to. But again, talking about that collaboration, equally, it's the franchisees or investors' best interest to keep the franchise all going and get their brand going. So that's we've just found that there's been a lot more collaboration around concepts and depending on the business models, that there's been give and take on both sides. So generally, again, we're in this fight together. We've got to survive.
Is that, and it sounds like you're speaking to a real strength of the model here in an environment like this that is demonstrated in a crisis, a corner, the alignment of interests here between the franchisee and the franchisor. I think sometimes the model gets a bit of bad press because sometimes relationships there can break down. But in a time of crisis, it's that kind of partnership and collaboration that builds a certain resilience into the model.
Yeah, absolutely. And as a franchisor, we also own restaurants as well, which allows us to experience what our franchise partners experience on the other end, and allows us to partner up better with them. And I think on the conversation of landlords and rentals, that conversation for me is a very short-term solve. What this has allowed us to do, or rather allowed us to see an opportunity going forward, is to, together with our franchise partners, just relook what our assets look like going forward. How much real estate do we actually need? I think given the new channels now, the omni-channels, digital channels, how do we rather use that opportunity and maximize our sales through alternative channels rather than just the brick and mortar, because the cost of real estate is rising and it's going to continue to rise. Whilst landlords might come to the table today, it's not always going to be that case post-COVID.
It's tough out there, but it is certainly demonstrating an inbuilt resilience in terms of the model. That said, Tony De Fonseca, who's on the panel, you said that up to 50% of franchises might not see it through this crisis because of the restrictions on the sale of alcohol and the curfew, for example, in the restaurant space. And one certainly hopes that common sense prevails there. I did see comments from the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs that government is reviewing the alcohol ban policy. So we're hoping to hear some news on that. But Nicole, coming to the points that were raised by a corner about looking for different distribution channels at this time, for a business like Cash Converters, I would imagine you still require a lot of physical interaction, people bringing their goods in to be pawned off. Is there a way to do that in a more digitized manner, to do it in a more online manner? What are you thinking about with regards to new channels?
Absolutely. We launch our webshop next week, so that would be the purchase of secondhand goods online. Time that we hopped on that bandwagon. In terms of bringing us our goods to sell, our stock holding at the moment is looking really solid. We've seen new customers coming in, before, but there is an element of customers not wanting to put foot in bricks and mortar. So we are experimenting with the Sell to Us online system. Customers will be able to upload pictures and negotiate with us over the internet. When we expect to see new customers coming into our stores, people who historically haven't known about our brand, and bring us all that stock you've been sitting at home for 4 months, you've decluttered, you've gone through cupboards you didn't know you had, you found items that are gathering dust, perfect time to get rid of it. So we have seen incredibly great stock coming through our doors, which has been an upturn of the COVID pandemic.
And tell me a little bit more about the web shop that you're going to be launching next week.
So the web shop's been a very interesting journey for us. We've spoken about it for many years. The difficulty we've always had is that we're a secondhand goods retailer. So we've got a huge range of unique once-off items, as opposed to a more traditional retailer where you've got smaller SKUs. So very interesting challenge to get all of those different secondhand goods packaged beautifully, make them look appealing, stick them on the internet and convince people that rather come shop with us as opposed to Facebook Marketplace or Gumtree. Brilliant journey to have forced our hand over the last couple of months. We launch next week. It's going to be really interesting to see what comes out of that. We've got things coming off the retail floor. Our general brick and brack moves very, very quickly. We've got some speciality items which we expect the web shop to move nicely for us, and integrating into a courier system. So if you order it today, it should arrive tomorrow or the next day. Although we're secondhand goods, we are still a professional slick operation. We want to give customers the same experience that you have opening that box of a brand new item, but just with something with a little bit more character, or something that you can't necessarily find in your day-to-day outlets.
Mm. And it's amazing how COVID has accelerated a lot of those plans. I was chatting to Mark Dieter, the CEO of AECI, the other day. He said, we're going to roll out Microsoft Teams over the course of a year or a couple of years. And all of a sudden, in the space of a month, they had rolled out Teams and they were using it across 90% of their workforce, Tony. So it is forcing our hand to innovate and to adapt. On that point, do you think the sector as a whole is probably best positioned to bounce back from COVID versus just standalone type business models?
I do indeed. Again, it comes from the strength in the collective. You know, even in this environment, where even media consumption habits have changed quite rapidly. We've always been present on social media, but we've put a lot of activity into social media. And we've seen print sadly dwindle, you know, the predictions of print dwindling over many years have just been forced now. So as a collective, you know, everybody contributing to a marketing pot, we've been able to actually be more aggressive. And it's certainly been our stance that in tough times you market harder. And we've been putting a lot more to social media, into engaging with communities, engaging with our customers, engaging with our staff, trying to keep them positive. And social media has come a long way and certainly contributed in that environment. So it has changed the way we look at things. Even a lot of our stores are in township communities, and where delivery wasn't really an option, now we're getting more and more customers that are asking us, can we deliver to their home in the township community? And there we're already also working on platforms to be able to assist our customers in that regard. So it has not only changed media consumption in the way we operate, but certainly changed habits quite quickly and forced us into a more digital age in a couple of months, what a lot of people didn't envisage happening in a couple of years. It has had that impact on us. Yeah.
I was chatting to Lawrence Comfer at Investec this morning, and he said, remarkably, they've seen some coffee shop businesses that they fund that have multiple outlets experiencing some of their best sales months ever in June. And it's because there's a lot of pent-up demand, but I think there's a lot more to that if you unpack it. We're working from home, so we're visiting our local strip mall a lot more than we're going to the big retail malls. And in that, I think opportunities are for new franchise businesses as well. Akona, how are you approaching the future?
So we're actually thinking about it in a very similar manner to Tony. And I'd just like to comment on the issue of social media, for example, is previously, you know, we always looked at marketing adverts as kind of the way to talk to our consumers. And there was never really any real-time feedback. We didn't know what they were thinking. We're just putting out an advert and hoping for the best. what today what social media allows us to do is to almost just get feedback immediately from our consumers and how they're responding to what we're putting out there. And it's a fantastic opportunity to interact with our consumers and hear what they're saying about our brand. And I think just looking into the future, you said something around, you know, the coffee shops kind of picking up sales, and it talks to people needing to connect. And I think as brands, we, especially within franchising, we have a fantastic opportunity to become those connection spaces for people, to create that within our restaurants, for example, within food, is to create, you know, to build such credibility around our brand and around our hygiene protocols, such that people feel comfortable to come in and to interact and to connect with one another, which is something that all of us have missed during this time of lockdown.
Yeah, we are social creatures at the end of the day, and there will be a return to normal. Tony, what would you like to see from government to help the sector rebound as quickly as it can? The numbers that I mentioned in the introduction, almost 14% of GDP, must employ about 1 million people. The franchise sector, very important in this economic environment. What would you like to see government do to help the sector bounce back as quickly as it can?
Yeah, well, obviously, it's always a fine line between balancing the importance of life, which is utmost in most of our minds. The reality is that we've had a lot of our staff saying, you know, if we don't, and community members, even in the hard lockdown, we do a lot of business with informal traders and supply informal traders for them to be able to trade on the streets and earn their daily living. And they couldn't over that period because it was illegal. So there is a fine line between the two, and it is important. And I'm sure this is not something that we can pull on past experience in this regard. But the reality is that we have to do everything possible to let business survive, and at times just apply common sense to some of the rules. You know, like having in the retail sector, having engagements with government where they encouraging us to put our staff on shifts and have less people working, but then they impose curfews. How do you put your people on shifts when they can only come to work at a certain time and they have to leave before a certain time? So some of the things just doesn't make sense. Why does somebody have to be home at 8 o'clock at night if you're going to be at home at 8 or 9 o'clock at night, it means you have to close your business earlier to sanitize and to be able to grow. So I know it's difficult, but just some common sense would be appreciated sometimes in imposing some of these regulations and take a firmer view on what the impact is on business and on people's livelihoods. There's literally people out there that are battling to make a living, and they need to survive. And you know, the pandemic is putting them in a position that they're not worried anymore about their health, you know, the condition of their health. They're just really trying to survive and stay alive, quite frankly. And we don't want to get people into that environment, because then they just don't care about regulations. And we often spend a lot of time in some of the communities we serve, and people are tired. People are tired of being told what to do. And they've got to a point where if they don't trade on the market and they don't know what they need to survive, they really don't care about the... and that's a sad reality, as important as it is that we have to take precautions. We have to just keep common sense in this environment and just make sure that we do everything possible to keep businesses alive, because that's really, when we come out at the other end of this, we need to collectively work hard to build this country. So let's just try and nurture and keep businesses going as much as we can in the interim period, so that they've got a stronger chance of surviving and building from there.
And not eroding that tax base as well that government's going to have to rely on in the rebuild as well. A corner from FASA's perspective, are you talking to government about some of these incongruencies in the regulations that Tony just mentioned? And are you confident that kind of message is landing at the moment?
So, you know what? What's been interesting throughout this journey is initially government was very keen, they were forthcoming, they kind of got everybody around the room, and they were discussing what the regulations would look like and what the impact would be in it in all the industries. Of late, that hasn't been the same. So the decisions that have been coming forth have literally been ideated at government level. There hasn't really been strong partnership with industry, with business. And I think that's a big opportunity for me, is as we you know, kind of resuscitate the economy and you know, try and revive it, what do we need to do as business? And we've got some ideas, and we should be sitting around the table with government, ideating together and co-creating solutions for sustainability rather than firefighting right now, because we will come out of this intense period. But what happens thereafter will really be dependent on the actions that we take now. So I feel whatever solutions we put on the table, government puts on the table, they need to be co-created. We need to think them through together, as opposed to government just saying, well, this is what we think should happen right now.
I think on that point, I'd like to leave viewers with one thought about franchising. Someone on my radio show a couple of years ago put it to me that it's just buying a job, and he looked at the returns on a Wimpy and a few QSRs. But it's so much more than that. What should someone who's thinking about starting their own franchise business and approaching a franchisor to get a license be thinking about? How should they evaluate this opportunity? Let's start with you, Tony.
Well, yeah, so, yeah. There is many opportunities out there that that can be perceived as buying a job. But what it also buys you is some independence to be able to grow your business and nurture and grow your future, quite frankly. So I think just going forward, the franchise sector, there's good brands out there that have built capacity and have built good relationships with the market that will survive these situations a lot easier than obviously up and coming brands. The reality is this: if it's a good, strong brand led by a good, solid franchisor, that whose interest at the end of the day, and most franchisors know very well that they can only grow if their investors and their franchisees grow. So it's just a common cause, and I would just encourage prospective people that are thinking of getting into the franchising, do their research, phone other franchisees, check out the history of the brand. No brand is absolutely perfect. Everybody makes mistakes, but it's really about how you bounce back and how you address the market. So anybody who wants to get into the sector, and often I remind my team that people are investing their life savings into a franchise concept, and it's a huge responsibility on our side to make sure that they have a decent future and a decent income for their families. So I really encourage people thinking in the franchise sector, just really do your research, take your time, think it through. Most importantly, don't get into something that just because you think you can make money. Get into something that you're passionate about, because then the money should follow. So I just encourage people through this time where there is chaos, there's always opportunity. And I just encourage people to stay focused on that. Take their time, research properly, and get into something that they're passionate about and backed by a good brand that's well-resourced.
Absolutely. Obviously, at a time like this, a lot of people are afraid. There's a lot of fear in the market. But at a time like this, it's also that you see those who are bold enough to go out and actually attack the market and look to try and maybe start a new business or grow something when everyone else is on the defensive, that you see great success come from it. That was Tony De Fonseca, immediate past chairman of FASA and MD of OBC Group. He was joined by Cornette Nagle, chairperson of the Franchising Association of South Africa and chief people officer at KFC, and Nicole Gundelfinger, group marketing manager at Cash Converters, talking all about how franchising is responding to COVID-19.